Hello and welcome to the show. My name is Donovan Morgan Grant, and I am joined by Mr. Harrison Chute.
Hello.
And this is Questions We Don't Have Answers. The two of us have been podcasting for some years now. Harry's been analyzing sci-fi on a social-political scale, and I've done shows on superhero comic books and superhero comic book media. So we've been in the podcasting game for a while, but thought we'd like to up our ante and try to talk about things that really matter. Things that people try to talk about but tend not to. Sociology, society, culture, race.
We need food!
So the purposes of this podcast is to have as honest and uncompromising a discussion as humanly possible. So hopefully this podcast will
explode the world!
Broaden your mindset and give way to critical thinking, because critical thinking is where it all begins. So sit back, enjoy, and give us your thoughts once you hear our takes on the subject matters of today. Welcome back to the podcast, Questions We Have No Answers. As always, I'm Donovan, and as always, he is Harrison.
Good day.
Yes, this is our first episode back from the bowels of California. I guess for me, not so much for you. And for this episode, I know we didn't tell you what we're going to do last time because we didn't thought about it yet. But this episode is another one that involves race, because I just can't help myself. And storytelling. It involves media conversations. And I thought a fitting title would be, should there be or can there be limits to storytelling? And this is a conversation that I'm centering around the topic of the upcoming HBO show Confederate that is being showrun by the two guys who showrun Game of Thrones. That as of this recording, last Sunday when Game of Thrones was on, I think people were hashtagging on Twitter hashtag No Confederate, protesting the making of this show. And for those who don't know, Confederate, this upcoming show that hasn't existed yet. According to its the official HBO Medium account, Confederate chronicles the events that leading to the, quote, Third American Civil War, quote. It takes place in an alternate timeline where the southern states have successfully seceded from the Union, giving rise to a nation in which slavery remains legal and has evolved into a modern institution. The story follows a broad swath of characters on both sides of the Mason-Dixon demilitarized zone. Freedom fighters, slave hunters, politicians, abolitionists, journalists, and the executives of a slaveholding conglomerate, and the families of people in their thrall. So this happened, and people were annoyed. I know we referenced it in a previous episode, or maybe the episode before the previous episode, in which basically people heard the notion of, let's make a show where slavery was never abolished, or the South won, or, you know, the Civil War was basically, you know, still going on or whatever. Basically, let's make an idea where, like, the Civil War of the North's victory never happened. And nobody liked that idea. I had a very knee-jerk no response to it. And I think pretty much everyone did. Except for those who've not publicly expressed their agreements towards it. But I think that why I want to talk about this now is because that after that night when the Twitter hashtag No Confederate thing happened, my brother, who likes Game of Thrones, he's like, "Oh, did you hear about this?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he was very, very vocal on how people were kind of, you know, jumping to conclusions without even having seen a clip of it, without having seen a trailer or even an episode of it. And I told you before on off the mic, we got into actually a kind of a shouting match over it. It was spirited. It was one where we ended very amicable. And we actually had a really good conversation, but initially we were very, very, like, dug in our heels in terms of our opposite sides. And I think that, like, the main conflict was that this is storytelling, this is fiction. Who puts limits on storytelling? And I think that's sort of the broader topic. Now, of course, you know, us talking about very real world instances and, you know, scary hypotheticals and how that reflects to modern society, it will get realistic as we go on. That's kind of what brings this topic about. But I think that that is sort of my eye on what our central conversation will be. Although I think it will kind of, you know, whirlpool around this topic. But what did you think about what comes into your mind when you think of this topic and this topic of storytelling and even the topic of like the Confederate show, Harry? What do you think of when you think of this episode before you actually say anything?
Well, I mean, like with Death Wish, I came into this when the conversation was already started. And so I saw, like, the idea to me was always this kind of conversation, if you will. And, you know, I saw a lot of the things, like, I understand where your brother's coming from because I think Twitter does a lot to kind of bastardize communication in the sense that, like, you see a lot of the same jokes, and it's like, okay, well, first of all, why is jokes even the first reaction? But, you know, that's just kind of how it is sometimes. Like, it's hard to actually kind of interface with Twitter, just given how we have always kind of reconciled technology or communications or whatever. It's a kind of a weird space. Because it's like, you know, not everybody, like, if some people are joking, that's not everybody, and then other people are having serious discussions, whatever, but, like, you know, I saw a lot of lazy comparisons and things like trying to bring the Man in the High Castle into this, not realizing that, well, people like defending it or talking back or bringing in the Man in the High Castle. And it was just kind of weird because it's like, you know, that book is like old as shit. That's like 50 years old almost. You know, that was from a different time. And I don't think that maybe we needed that Amazon show. But it's just weird that, like, these two guys can come up with, yes, an idea that's very similar. And then it's just, so I actually don't know. I think I just don't like the idea that a Philip K. Dick thing has to be kind of in this conversation at all. But that's, I mean, that's just petty, whatever.
fanboy.
But it's, exactly. But also it just kind of, it kind of segues into, I think, was the thrust of the issue that we always kind of threaten to pivot away from, which is the white male entitlement at the heart of it.
Yes.
Which is, you know, again, that story, The Man in the High Castle, is very old. And then these guys come in with their story, which is basically the same thing. And, you know, I feel like it didn't originate. I mean, there was, like, the Difference Engine. I mean, alternate history has been around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these guys come in with their, like, it's a lot like David Cage with Detroit Become Human, where he's like, in this story, the robots are actually the victims. It's just like, you've never, ever, have you ever heard of science fiction? Like, they come up with this basic-ass premise that is, like, so fucking offensive, and, like, we don't, obviously we don't need it right now. And I think that the idea of what we need or what we don't need is maybe less ambiguous with Death Wish, which I don't mean to keep preempting that. But
oh, we'll talk about that.
Okay, but, like, yeah, it's just, again, it's like, I think at the heart of this issue, because we've talked about, like, the limits of storytelling before a little bit, but this time we have a very discreet case, and yes. I think that the biggest problem is that kind of, like, we can kind of just, this feeling that we can, that these guys can just kind of do whatever the fuck they want, and they don't have to listen to anybody, and that's very frustrating, and it's also kind of like a big deal. It's not just about being frustrated that they can do whatever. That actually means quite a lot, and hopefully we'll be able to deconstruct that or whatever.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that I kind of came back to even throughout my yelling at Denmark, where is that it came off, because I had not really seen a lot of interviews or whatever, but, like, I remember during that night, their response was, you know, basically give it a chance.
Yeah.
And that was just infuriating.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's like, why? Because, you know, and I think that I remember one of the first things I said was this very much calls, because I think people can kind of see this show already. You know, the conflicted white supremacist racist guy who owns slaves, and he loves his family, and he wants to do anything, you know, and he embodies all these positive goods and probably has a beard. I guess even or maybe a 5 o'clock shadow if it's modern times, but boy does he hate black people, and it's like, what a great character that is. You can kind of just see it happening all across, and, you know, and then Michael K. Williams, I'm sure, will be like, you know, like, oh, the, like the slave freer guy who might die in the fourth season finale, and that'll be the big shock. Where it's just, I feel that, like, people can kind of see, like, the alternate history of this actually being a show, or maybe the future history, and it coming across as, like, ultimately crass. And, you know, there's the very real concern on trading on black pain, trading on black trauma, commercializing, commodifying this, just to kind of just be real, man, and, you know, kind of, you know, have sort of, I guess even invite the idea of moral ambiguity into what we've already kind of signed off as, you know, being a real human evil, being the original sin of the world. And like, if you were to modern storytelling likes to be not only ambitious, but it likes to be kind of ambivalent towards morality, I think. And if you were to modernize, like, slave times and slavery, then I feel that if people were unable to express this, the feeling was that this would be sort of softening racism at a time where racism is at an all-time public high. Yeah. And the concern was that it was just going to be straight up alt-right, just bukkake porn, where it was going to be, you know, something that where people could find themselves in these, you know, characters. And in fairness, you would hope that people who are making a show like this in 2017 would be smarter than that to, like, you know, overtly sympathize with a white racist kind of character. And also fairness, it should be said that they these guys, I should actually say their names, because I looked this up.
I can't pronounce their names.
Well, there is D.B. Lace, and David Benioff, and they do Game of Thrones, right?
Yeah.
I'm looking at their pictures now. Yeah, the white guys, of course they do. And they're the showrunners. They're the guys who do the Game of Thrones. They showrun the Game of Thrones series. I know the Game of Thrones is ending in the next season or two. And it should be said that they brought along a husband and wife writing team. These two black writers, Nichelle Trample Spellman and her husband Malcolm Spellman, very early on in the process to kind of, you know, consider the alternate history and consider how that would affect modern history and the technology and that kind of stuff. And there's an article that I showed for you on Vulture that kind of gets into why they want to tell this story and the excitement for exploring history in that way and talking about, you know, the backlash, which at that point the Twitter thing hadn't happened yet. So I feel that, like, it wasn't as vocal when they did this interview, which I guess, like, the Twitter thing was like 10 days later.
Yeah.
But if you read this article on Vulture, then I think that there are you can see some sides of, you know, doing the story, at least from the husband and wife writer's side, where, you know, they're talking about, you know, of course we experience, you know, being black in America. We know how this can go wrong, and it requires an incredible amount of concentration, focus, and intelligence to tell the story. But that's sort of our job to do it in that way. But I have to say that, like, reading the words from, like, I've already forgot their names, Weiss and Benioff, they kind of just they came across to me as just very, just kind of gleeful about exploring the potential for the storytelling potential, rather than, you know, sort of like the cultural ramifications of it. And perhaps they're taking that for granted, and they're like, you know, well, of course our viewers would know, not to this or whatever. But that's always, I mean, that's they're kind of their privilege to presume. And I think that ultimately, I would say, kind of just kind of make a long story short, my brother, we kind of agreed that you can have a reaction to something, hearing something. Of course, you shouldn't try to. I guess it's an American right to try to destroy it, but it would behoove somebody to have a better, you know, image, and to see exactly, you know, like a clip or a trailer or an episode, what precisely the show is going to be before you say it should finish. But at the same time, I feel that, like, these guys came out of the gate with an incredibly bad foot forward, and they didn't, I really feel that, like, their whole, you know, give us a chance crap, they really did not come across as though they were taking it seriously, and that's just everyone's kind of concern right now. It's not political correctness. This is not just, you know, oh, we don't want to be you know, a nature to horror storytelling. It's this sort of, like, thing where, like, I just don't think it's the time and the place to kind of do this show, and whatever sort of deft insightfulness can come from seeing, you know, the land of slavery at a time where we have, you know, camera police shootings on camera, and you know, like the black prison rate is at an all time high, that kind of stuff. I just don't understand what is so alternative about this, because it's not as though, you know, oh well, there's, you know, people like Ava DuVernay and Issa Rae, that means that everything is all fine now. Liberals kind of understand that this is kind of an ongoing process, and I feel that, like, with the amount of information that's out there, and with the amount of information that people are kind of, you know, constantly feeding themselves when it comes to racial relations in America, that makes them sensitive towards other people's lack of that understanding, and that lack of expression in terms of hypothetical storytelling versus, you know, dealing with modern culture in a very deft way. You read that? Did you get through that whole Vulture interview?
I did not. I read probably maybe half of it, but
what did you think of it at the point that you read?
I mean, yeah, I think there's that glee and also that kind of like childlike, like kind of like not crocodile tears, but I don't know what the expression is, but they're kind of like playing themselves off as more innocent and kind of like wide-eyed and bushy-tailed or whatever. But I mean, how could they not know what they're doing? Especially at this. Well, I guess yeah, this was 10 days before it really blew up. But still, I mean, come on, the lack of any kind of foresight or whatever. It's not that difficult. But I mean, I think like it actually, honestly, like I haven't really read a great kind of one-to-one deconstruction of why this show shouldn't be on. But I don't think that there really needs to be one, because like in terms of like a thematic, like point for point, like this is why we can't have it, because I hear people say that like, well, the world is already basically as if slavery didn't go away, but also they're like, I just like the two main arguments kind of like contradict themselves, but like that doesn't really matter. It's like, I don't understand why there needs to be such a big, huge argument against it. I mean, it's just like, well, maybe big, huge in terms of like intellectual, but just like the emotional response. Like, what you hear, like, let's say, so one of the measures for empathy in the 21st century that we always talk about is like listening to people. And this isn't a case, and they said, like, oh, you know, we had like, we have two black people, and they're not just going to be in the writer's room, they're going to be executives. So obviously they signed off on it. But you have like, the internet as embodied by Twitter, that's hundreds if not thousands of people all saying no, many of them black. I think they would know, first of all, from a financial standpoint, which isn't really relevant, that's a bad idea. But second of all, it's like, why? Like, I just like, that's so fucking stupid. You have to mount this production. You have to create slavery as you know, this fictional landscape in live action. As, you know, production designers, like, that's fucking insane. You're going to be doing that with people staring daggers at your back the whole time. Like, I can't even imagine. That's so stupid. I think it would really behoove them to put out a book, because, you know, Guillermo del Toro and Chuck Hogan pitched The Strain to FX, or to TV stations all around, I suppose, and they got rejected because it was this huge vampire thing. So what they did was put out a trilogy of books called The Strain. And then they pitched it again to FX, and they picked it up and made it into a show, which is coming into its final year, I guess. Like, I don't understand why they can't. At this point, I think it would be a great idea to kind of peel back on development, which is, I suppose, ongoing, because they haven't started filming anything yet.
They're not even like, to come up with an original script. Like, it's surprising how much we're talking about it, because it's barely even like set up. No characters, no scripts, no nothing. Just a premise.
Yeah, and I was thinking about this the other day. Like, we only really wait around forever for, like, video games, not usually TV shows or movies. Those are usually announced, like, a year or 2 years ahead of time. So this is super bizarre. And I mean, obviously Game of Thrones is unstoppable, and it's going to have 5 prequels at some point, but that's so stupid. Like, why would you want to – obviously they didn't think that it was going to be – have this reaction. Or I guess they did. They were talking about, like, oh, we knew it was going to – you know, catch a little bit of heat for this, so we just did it anyway. But yeah, that attitude, man, that is, I mean, it's frustrating on top of the potential for this show to be a very, very harmful thing. I mean, it's exactly what we were talking about with Generation KKK a while ago. Like, that was a right. show that we never saw what it became. And so, sure, like, that's an argument. Like, you didn't let it become what it was going to be. Who knows, right? But at the same time, we know enough that the interface of that premise, which is an exploration of the real KKK, to current day America, which it probably would have premiered in 2017, or I guess 2016, given the turnaround for reality. I don't know. Like, that's not something that it's not how to actually phrase it. Again, that's where it kind of breaks down, is that, yeah.
Just bad timing, and it's just not. Devil's advocate, though, in okay. You know, the point of the point of the conversation. These are white guys talking about something that really can't be well as understood as black people. I think it's just safe to say. I mean, you can be the biggest historical scholar in the world, but information doesn't, you know, replace generational and racial memory and emotional, you know, and history. You can read about something, but it's learning something is different than experiencing something. Because it's different to see people who look like you and read about them kind of going through slavery. That being said, it's the acknowledgement is that, you know, they can come up with a show, a premise, and go for it. As inflammatory as a premise is, besides, is there anything else besides the timing, that being the current presidential, not even the presidential administration, but I would just like, you know, the birth of the alt-right movement, mainly, you know, Richard Spencer, those guys. If this was like 5 years ago, or the alt-right was sort of, you know, just not really a thing that was public, would there still be enough reasons for this show not to happen, for these guys to just be completely, like, for their rights to tell this story, or as in terms of storytellers, those rights be revoked?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I think there's a lot of comparison points, like, was there any pushback against The Man in the High Castle being produced? I guess not, because I think I even voted for that pilot on Amazon, their stupid pilot program where you have to vote for things. That's so dumb.
I never heard of that.
Yeah, it's really weird and kind of creepy or whatever. And then there's also, like, you know, I was thinking, like, when I was watching the Death Wish trailer, I was like, you know, if this came out in 2007 or whenever Death Sentence did, would it be different? But there's, I mean, that's a conversation for later. And then I think there's also the WGN show Underground. Like, that's a show about, it's not about Harriet Tubman, but she's, like, one of the main characters. But it's about, you know, the Underground Railroad and slavery. And, like, that's a, I haven't seen a lot of it, but it seems pretty good. I think it got canceled recently. But it's kind of like, I think for idiots or for people who don't know everything or don't know much about the situation, however you want to define that going in, I think that would kind of be a good starting point, which is to say, what is the difference between Underground and Confederate? And I think it can't just be about the white showrunners, but I think that's such a huge part of it. And I think there's also because it's about the gaze, right? And this time it's not necessarily about the male gaze, but the non-black gaze. In this case, like, because, I mean, I read a review of Detroit that pretty much put me off. I was pretty interested in seeing that movie, but the writer talked about how this is a movie about, you know, black bodies just being destroyed. And if you're a black person watching that, like, that's got to be, you know, pretty fucking crazy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a difference between that and Rosewood. John Singleton directed that movie. I don't think it's the same kind of, I don't know exactly how to describe it, but almost like distance or kind of clinical fascination almost with the violence. And when you think about Catherine Bigelow, and especially these guys, Weiss and Benioff, you know, they're creators who have set a precedent for extreme violence. Bigelow for realism in film with Zero Dark Thirty and The Hurt Locker, and then these guys with Game of Thrones. Like, I think that's always been kind of one of the most forward concerns, is I don't want Game of Thrones applied to, you know, a Confederate occupied America, like that level of violence. We already get a little bit of that with the racism endemic to Game of Thrones, so we don't need that blown up to this level, certainly.
Is it because, like, there's an Australian show called, it's on Sundance, called Cleverman, and it's about indigenous Australian people called Hairy People who have, like, superpowers, and it's very, very much like the X-Men in that, you know, they're kind of hunted and feared, and this gigantic comment on race. And I learned about it because, like, as Noah Brasky was writing about it, and he was saying that, like, the whole, you know, kind of underdog minority narrative that X-Men completely wrapped itself around, it matters so much more because these are, like the actors are legitimately Indigenous Australian people, and people, like behind the camera, Indigenous Australian people. So, like, they're talking about a real type of people as opposed to sort of fictional. So it's something where, like, you know, the metaphors are not even there's metaphors. They're kind of hypothetical futures or alternate timelines that involve different people, and they're kind of about their stories. And when you hear, I think the difference between that and the Confederate is that Confederate isn't it just again kind of talking about how it presented its premise. It sounds very much like a Game of Thrones scene with a whole cast of characters, and it's going to be, we're going to get, like, you know, the north side and then the south side's perspective. And it's just like who the fuck has time for that? I mean, I read that same review of Detroit, and I actually saw a video review of Detroit where there was sort of like, you know, this is the point that's being made is not particularly insightful. Like, you know, racism is bad, MK. And they're kind of, you know, they're making that point by displaying extreme violence without any sort of, like, real revelation. And it's kind of just, again, trading off of, like, black pain. And so I think that's what people are trying to presume, especially with HBO. Now, I don't watch Game of Thrones, and I know that there are, like, the woman from, like, the last couple of Fast and Furious films is on Game of Thrones. You told me, I forgot how much you've watched, but, like, how would you say that race is actually handled in that show for however it is?
I mean, I think there's, like, I can visualize two black characters, and I know that that's always been a problem, and a number of celebrities, you know, Forbes and all that, like, published all these headlines that are like, John Boyega slams Game of Thrones, and it's like, all right, well, he's just pointing it out. That's always been a problem, diversity, because, and that's, I mean, the response from either Martin or the showrunners has always been pretty priceless, which is to say that, you know, I think Martin had said, like, the world of Westeros and Essos is not as diverse as the U.S. now, and it's like, all right, dude, you know, it's fantasy, right? It's fantasy, but also, because you want to say that it's like, this is a made-up world. But you also kind of want to say that it's kind of based in either 12th or 15th century Britain. I don't remember which one, because it's War of the Roses, but it's also kind of like something else, in which, you know, black people were, like, around. First mm-hmm. of all, they were in Africa, but they were also in Britain. So, like, there's right. – because Game of Thrones takes place on, like, two continents, and one of them is, like, Spain kind of. And it's just like, yeah, there's multitudinous opportunities for diversity that they always missed. And then I guess there was a storyline where Daenerys, the lady who is Sarah Connor, but not Lena Headey.
Amelia Clark.
Amelia Clark, yeah, where she goes to a place called Slaver's Bay and frees all these slaves, but then indentures them to herself to fight a war.
My eyes just bugged out. Oh, my God. Oh.
Yeah, that also caught some heat. And then I guess the only upside is that there's not enough black people that they're brutalized to the level of everybody else, so I guess there isn't that. But that's, like, the only good part about it, is that the upside to no diversity, I guess. But, yeah, it's just fucking stupid. I mean, that's the way you said I don't watch Game of Thrones, like, I think that's going to kind of be the thing in a few years. It's just, like, it's a political statement. It's like, oh, I didn't watch Game of Thrones. No, I'm cool.
Well, and I know that you have, and I understand you have, but I don't actively not watch. I just get caught up in other stuff. But, like,
well, I don't care. Fuck that show.
It's so feminist, you see. But I think another element about it is that, you know, to one degree, I do understand the lack of diversity with some storytellers because, you know, writers always write what they're familiar with, and I do get, you know, if you're a fantasy has historically not been very diverse, to my knowledge, in terms of, like, you know, real life race and not just, like, elves or whatever. So I get, you know, like, oh, well, this, you know, kind of come up with an excuse. it's like kind of just defending what you're used to, essentially. But on the other hand, on the other side, it's like if you want to, if you're a storyteller who is used to things that are not diverse and you want to make it diverse, so you bring in all these non-white characters. It's like, well, I have these non-white characters. I want to write them well, but they're not going to be the main characters, so I can make their deaths meaningful, but still kill them brutally. That kind of it's very much a like genetic trend with certain writers. I'm not conjuring that up. That's kind of just like writing history. Yeah. I think that. What is potentially, I think what my brother was going on about is that we shouldn't get to the point where we just revoke people's right to tell stories, even if they make us uncomfortable. That's sort of been like a freedom of speech kind of thing that we've kind of enjoyed for, you know, most of our, you know, like the last 50 years of the country. But the stakes are much higher now, and... things don't exist in a vacuum, or things don't happen in a vacuum. Media, no matter how much people want to think this, media isn't just entirely harmless when it's put out there. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, he's not wrong. Again, things must be said with precision and care. So I guess in this instance, it would be like, you know, if they come across as though they like, if no white person was involved in the production of this. How different would you imagine the response to be?
I think you would kind of just be like mixed, like, okay, that's a weird idea for a show, but fine. I think it would be better because I think there's that. And then there's also, what if it was just about the Civil War, which I know we also don't need, but that would have been a little bit better. Well, actually hitting now, that would actually be shit. But yeah, I think if it was like led by a black showrunner and everybody was black, it would, you know, by precedent, it would create a different product. It would be something a little bit more sensitive than what we imagine. And I think, you know, the issue with Mr. Denmark Grant's argument is that it's kind of that slippery slope mentality, right? It's like,
yes,
like,
yeah,
you know, you don't think we're going to have a conversation every time this comes up. It's not that we're going to take away. Like, this isn't going to set a precedent. It might kind of empower people to talk back on things, and that's all this has ever been. Because the truth of it is, for all the shouting and hashtags on Twitter, like, that ultimately doesn't have the pull that we think it might, or that we fear it might, I should say. And I think that it's actually a pretty natural form of dialogue or exchange between consumer and creator, because it's not like we come in as some kind of powerful force and police something directly, but we register our discontent at an early stage, and then HBO can listen if they want to. It's that option is there for them. They know that this is not being well received. I mean, they can keep banking on, well, it'll turn out differently than what it's set out, you know, what it appears. But at some point, something was rotten in this idea, which is to say the idea, and how much can you really like listen to them, like listen to them, like that was the most, you know, that was actually pretty racist, but like
listen to those people.
Listen to those fucking people. Like when they say, oh my god, I keep going, but when people say like I don't want this because that's not like, oh, they're just reacting to just the premise alone, but no, they're reacting to,
yes, exactly,
what the premise represents. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Exactly. It's not just, you know, I don't like that idea. It's like they can just kind of picture it.
Yeah.
It doesn't take a lot of imagination to kind of picture it.
Exactly. It's a basic idea.
Yeah. I just now there are examples of this happening. You know, this sort of happening where. I don't know, inviting, making race the story, and having that being like, you know, told by like white storytellers has produced, you know, crap.
Yeah.
I'll leave Death Wish to you because I have my own example. Although I'll be talking about Death Wish, the 2017 version or whatever, whenever it's coming out. My friend Osvaldo Oyola, professor. New York. He has this blog, this comics blog called The Middle Spaces, and he wrote these couple of really terrific essays on character Black Lightning. And those are next. I'm not talking about that, but like they linked to an article he wrote a few years ago about the character this notorious storyline, which I'm going to gleefully talk about. This took place, I think it was in the 70s, of the Legion of Superheroes. Legion of Superheroes was a DC Comics title about, like, basically the superheroes in the future. Like, in, like, the, like, 1,000 years in the future. Like, basically Futurama-era superheroes that were inspired by Superman, and, like, they're mainly teenagers, whatever. But whatever. There was a storyline of the Legion of Superheroes, and then Superboy was also there for some reason, where you don't see any black characters in Legion of Superheroes because it was a 70s comic book. Well, it turns out there's a reason for that, because they're all on this, like, you know, black planet, and their, like, you know, superheroic leader, Tyrock, was this very pissed off black guy who's like, you know, you Legion of Superheroes don't do anything for us. You know, when there was the Great War of, you know, space name, you didn't help us out. When there was, like, the Ion Storms of blah, 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 you didn't help us out. But why? And all the characters react like, you know, well, we're not racist. We have blue characters here and green characters here. You're just bitter. You know, he sure does have a chip on his shoulder kind of thing. And it was basically like, you know, well, let's introduce a black character and make it all about how angry he is, and, you know, and all about, you know, how he doesn't understand, you know, emotions, no substitute for intelligence. And, you know, they're not racist because they have Brainiac 5 and he's green. And it's like, and, like, even the writers at the time, I forgot who dictated the story, but the artists were, like, saying, this is the most racist thing we've ever seen in the 70s. And it's an example of, like, you know, just not caring when you do this sort of, like, story. It's like, let's do a story about race, let's do a story about, you know, black characters, and not really care. It's like with Detroit. It's like, you know, what does it really mean? Is the story, not the theme, but the emotional resonance of the story, that shouldn't be all that requires a story to be told necessarily. You know, like you shouldn't just harp on how a character feels to make their blackness or to make their ethnic background real. It's all about sort of like, you know, cultural context and how that would, you know, interact with the different characters and kind of the diversity of it in terms of storytelling. And I thought that the whole Tyrock thing was a hilarious instance that where, like, everyone's ashamed to even know about that story. But
yeah,
I mean, go ahead.
Well, the thing that gets me about that is there's always that moment in, like, a movie or a TV show where the marginalized character has to, like, complain about their marginalization. It's the same thing with Tyrock, like, being like, "You guys weren't there." Like, at the center of it, like, the white people creating the show or writing the comic are like, you know, this is a legitimate issue. They weren't there, but that's no way to kind of deliver that, because it just makes them sound like they're complaining, right. And or just generally being antagonistic. Like, when you kind of wrap the social justice issue in antagonism, that's really fucked. And and a lot of times in modern movies, it happens because, like, you want the main character to, like, feel bad. It's kind of like, I wish I could actually think of one of the examples, but it's essentially like the scene in Jaws where they're hanging the shark and Brody is, like, he learns that that's not the real shark, and then the widow comes of, like, one of the victims, and she, like, slaps him. And so you might, like, some people in the audience may be like, "Well, like, what a bitch." But it's like, well, she's actually, like, representing the conflicted part of this movie where it's like, oh, man, responsibility, and you got to be a hero, whatever. And this is, like, an example of falling down. But the way it's delivered is really shitty. And I think that that's a very concrete example of how you can kind of have a stumbling block when you're not, you know, in that world, when you're kind of just an onlooker. And, you know, that's what happened. Like, with Detroit, I mean, I'm not going to say that, like, Detroit's, like, an unnecessary movie. And I think the Bigelow and Bull team has not made a movie I've liked, but I think that they're very interesting and I'll keep following them. But right. I think the Detroit, like, that's all about, like, kind of, I think it's maybe it's, like, raising awareness about that incident. Like, there's a number of, you know, horrifying things that happened in American history that we don't really learn about in history class, and that's definitely one of them. But again, like, the movie doesn't seem to be more than kind of, like, irreversible. Like, rape is bad. In this case, it's like shooting black people is bad. Like, that's not really, like, to get there, to all the hoops you got to jump through, all the mountain you got to climb to reach that message. So not worth it. All the people you got to shoot and kill and rape in the case of Irreversible, or, like, you know, have put into slavery in the case of Confederate, like, not worth it. Not at all.
Yeah, exactly. I brought that up. You know, like racism is bad in K is not necessarily a very... I mean, it's a very important message, but it's not one that's certainly not been done before, which, in fairness, should not preclude a story from being told, because, you know, that plenty of stories are, you know, kind of regurgitated all over. But
sure.
It's all about... Because I'm kind of... That was another thing that DJ and I kind of went up against. But, like, it's all about, I don't know, purpose, whatever. And, again, I mean, like... I'm not. I will repeat that these guys had just a pathetic like foot forward in terms of presenting themselves. Like, give us a chance, yeah. But just the old Tie Rock thing was like, you know, like, so now who's the real racist kind of shit? it's just make white audiences. That's another thing. There's a lot of making white audiences feel better narratives in these, which I'm very aware of, and I know you're aware of in terms of my own writing. We're like. You want to kind of be real, and not just and you know not, take the issue seriously, but also like stop being wed to making them make my audiences feel better. Well, but yeah. you can make them not necessarily like feel bad, but like, you know, also make them kind of being aware of themselves. You know, that's the kind of thing where like why audiences are, you know, white people have all this they have this idea of racism as just being the KKK. And lynching, and like that's it, you know,
yeah.
Or not hiring somebody specifically because they're black or Asian or Hispanic or Muslim or something like that. Like very, very naked, easy to condemn evil, as opposed to learned behavior and perspectives through the history of a very racist culture. Like I think it wasn't Ta-Nehisi Coates. It was somebody who was on The Daily Show, like, I think the last year, Jon Stewart, who said, you know, you can't have hundreds of years of slavery and just come out that completely reversed. It's going to take as much time, if not longer, to kind of get away from that. That's just the reality of it. And I feel as though that, like, people who just think that, like, oh, racism, you know, people who think that racism isn't another thing, that we're beyond that, are just, you know, worth it. They're just not even worth acknowledging. But... when it comes to this, you gotta understand that people really take it seriously. I'm always quick to agree that there can be very knee-jerk reactions that can be kind of over the top in terms of certain things. Like I mentioned the kind of thing with, like, you know, the dude on the root hating on Emilia Clarke, because I thought that was like just like, I don't know, that was kind of, you know, like kind of yelling for attention. But I show up about fucking slavery. It's just modern slavery. I don't know. It's horrifying. And I think that certain examples make the point of this being something that a lot of people, more so than I think people are giving credit, would find comfortable. Case in point, the Death Wish trailer. So I'm gonna throw it to you. What did you think about that?
Well, first of all, it looks fucking awful. But second,
yes, it does.
Yeah, like, there's, I mean, the one shot that you had mentioned, like, where he shoots all those guys on his lawn, like, or on their lawn, like, that's very, very specific imagery that harkens back to Resident Evil 5, where it's like, okay, so you're going to have this white guy, and sure, he has a black sidekick, but he's going to go through Africa shooting a zombified Africa. Like, that is, like, that imagery means something, and maybe it didn't mean anything to the Japanese guys at Capcom, maybe it doesn't mean anything to Eli Roth. But, you know, for a lot of people, that's something real. And, Death Wish has always been this very complicated thing. And I think this new movie is trying to reconcile the original Death Wish movie and the sequels in a way, like, you know, it's kind of funny. Like they're playing this super, super outdated AC/DC song.
I know.
And,
so pleased with myself.
Yeah. It's kind of like, oh, it's not entirely serious. But I think that's kind of the wrong way to go about it. Like, Death Wish 3 is fucking hilarious, and it's a good thing that most of the criminals in that movie were white, except for the giggler, I guess. I don't know, he was kind of swarthy, and he gets it pretty bad. But, you know, I watched the full Assault on Precinct 13 recently, because I'd never seen the whole thing. And they actually, because the gang in that is, like, multi-ethnic but mostly white. And they have like a little blurb about that on the radio in the beginning. It's like, this is, you know, unusual multi-ethnic gang. I'm like, good on you, John Carpenter. I guess it's just like, you know, here's a guy in 1976 who's just like okay, we're going to have a zombie, we're going to remake Night of the Living Dead, but with, like, gangbangers, basically. And they're just going to be, like, you know, there's going to be an Asian guy, there's going to be a lot of white guys, a couple of black guys, like, but the main character is going to be black. Like, that was, one in a million. Like, that's crazy. That never happens. And then you get something like Death Wish, and it's like, this is not only that specific imagery, but it's also the narrative of empowered by a gun because my family was fucking killed and my women family. Yes. Thankfully the daughter was not raped into catatonia like she was originally, I guess. But, you know, like that is the oldest American male adolescent power fantasy. That is like the most fucked sociopathic thing. Like, I haven't seen the original Death Wish. But I feel like the story, like, maybe it's not a perfect story, but it is at its heart a good one. It's talking about how, like, revenge is not the solution, how it kind of destroys you as a person. And maybe that's what will happen in this one, but still, in the beginning, he does pick up a gun and shoot all the scary black people, and they have to become scary black people for him to do that. And that's, that is super, super fucked.
Well, I mean, I've seen Death Wish 1, 2, and 3. A long time ago, though, but like, I know we talked about this before on the phone, I think, but like, the original Death Wish novel is supposed to be like very anti-vigilantism, where somebody, like, you know, a liberal becomes a vigilante after his wife's killed, his daughter's raped, and it's not supposed to valorize him. And the Death Wish film was controversial because there was a lot more ambiguity in Bronson's Paul Kersey becoming a vigilante, where. Yeah. It wasn't nearly as, like, you know, cheery as Death Wish 3, where there are literally guys, literally guys, like, shooting people down and then, like, cheering Paul Kersey as he slowly walks across the street.
Yes, all the elderly folks looking out their windows.
Exactly, like they're all, you know, it's like Willy Wonka or something.
Yes,
but like that's the thing, like it was supposed to be like this kind of like moody kind of thing where it kind of sparked a discussion, and of course, you know, it had like Bernie Getz was a very real life. Sort of instance of that where, you know, you have a guy shoot people in a train who may or may not try to accost him, but there's a very racist element towards it. And then Death Wish, they are racist films. I'm no problem mentioning that. Especially the second one really does kind of, you know, take the first one and kind of just make it a lot more gratuitously. It basically it repeats the first one and just makes it kind of like foul. Although I will admit there are some fun lines in that movie. but someone online said, like, you know, Death Wish has always been racist, and it always has been. I mean, I don't think any idiot doesn't know that, but like it was very kind of like unaware of itself. This one, I mean, first of all, the way that if the Bronson series had never existed, this is still a very familiar movie. Like this The Brave One with Jodie Foster.
The Brave One.
Where she did the exact same thing. But there's a very, like, anvil on the head, unaware of itself, kind of, like, idiocy towards it, to where is Bruce Willis in a hoodie buying guns, and they're like, well, here you go, and then, like, going after black people. And he looks like a serial killer. He doesn't look like
a
hero.
He really does.
He doesn't even look like Frank Castle.
It's
just kind of, like, you know, kind of this haunting ghost kind of thing. Where there's something about him being in a hoodie which disturbs me, and I don't know if that's them sort of, you know, like weaponizing that in a way which people feel that it was weaponized when Trayvon Martin was wearing one, and Geraldo Rivera famously, like, you know, decried, or to make him seem scary, or what, or I don't know, reclaiming that imagery to make him seem like somewhat of an underdog. But there's something about that. I'm not even going to say problematic. It's just weird and wrong. But it's Bruce Willis who, you know, is Bruce Willis, and like you mentioned, like I was kind of like riffing on it, but like he just walks up to a guy and just shoots, and they showed the entire scene in the trailer, like the blood splashes and everything, and that kind of like really, that kind of sat with me for another few minutes where I was just like, oh my god, that's not. What do they think black people think about when they hear police shootings in America, whatever, and these police, like, you know, not being constantly being acquitted one after the other, like that's not fucking cool. And I don't care what that guy would have done. He looks like Birdman to me, which is kind of funny. But like, it's just, it's so targeted towards a very, very exact audience that is not, it's not worth targeting to only those people anymore.
Yeah. I mean, bringing it to police shootings is kind of the crux of it, really, because it's like, when the cop pulls the trigger, there's a lot going on in their mind. You know, man, woman, white, Asian, many, many types of people have done this. But, you know, what's going on in their brain is that to some extent, it's not wrong what they're doing. It's about survival. And when you have images like that, when it's the hero, and maybe he's a dark hero, maybe he's an anti-hero, but he's the hero, he's Bruce Willis, when he's shooting a scary black man, it's just like, that's just kind of how, like, that's a certain currency. Like, that becomes a lingua franca.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's very normalized. And I think it, something like Death Wish is really disheartening, because it's just like, for Donovan and I, who are trying to be storytellers and who are trying to influence media by creating it, like, we're going to be pushing back against that image with counter images. And that's also where Who Fears Death comes in when we get back to Confederate. But, you know, like, this is just like driving us back into the hole from which we came. Right. And it's just so, it's like, oh my God. And like, I really like vigilante movies.
Sure.
Like Death Sentence, like, that's not, it's not a great movie, but it's kind of like the perfect template. Great trailer. But like, that movie was not problematic. I mean, it was, but not for race, because it was a white gang. It was like Garrett Hedlund or something. Or the other guy.
I know neither.
But like, you know, I Saw the Devil, like, they're all Koreans. It was like, this is like, why would you like. And then it's like, in the beginning, you have that woman who's like, I don't know, he's like a white dude. It's like, what are you trying to say with that? Like, that it's okay, because I guess, you know, saying white dude is like, that's a huge insult. Like, that's the N-word for white people. So I guess.
No. It's like, I don't know, what you just said was racist is like the N-word for them or whatever.
That's very true, yes.
Sorry.
So I guess it's kind of like Eli Roth being like, well, we're going to be a little racist toward white people too. Like, I don't know. It's just like this. I feel kind of bad for the guy now. It's just like, he's made this terrible thing, and maybe it's not bad, but it's like the way it's presented again. It's just like, there's, yeah, not putting their best foot forward.
I believe that the original Death Wish, the gangs that like attacked his wife and daughter, it was like several people. Where this one, it seems like one guy. It was always like, I think both the first two, there was like, it's like five guys, and it was like, I think they were like either a group of multiracial guys or like Hispanic dudes.
Mm-hmm.
I know Lawrence Fisherman was one of them.
Yes.
Super high. but yeah, that's a good point, where it's like, you know, where we see the guy, he's very clearly like white European looking, but then like Bruce Willis then decides to go after the entire like Young Money crew. But it's okay, because there was a black kid in the hospital, so he was saving him. And like, there's that black cop who was investigating, and the black woman said he was like a guardian angel.
Yeah, jeez, I forgot about that.
Me too. Oh, you know, it's to this point where it's just like, there's some fucking things that white people should stop doing and never do again. It is to that point.
Right.
Because there's no value in doing this very straightforward white savior narrative in the streets unless you're going to critique it. Unless you're going to completely critique it in ways which will make people think otherwise of it who thought otherwise, for most of their lives. And this story, this is what people don't want to see, No Confederate, because they're going to see these imagery of, like, you know, these people in bondage and being tortured by their slave masters.
Yeah.
And they said, well, we got to be realistic towards it. And that being the regulated image to where it's not horrifying anymore. Because a white guy can literally just show up and shoot a black guy on his own property. And apparently that's not horrifying right now. That, for some reason, that's not a problem. So you
right,
have
it's cool.
So you have, you know, movies like 12 Years a Slave, where like Twiddle Edge of War would be hanging on a rope for like 12 hours. And not die, and like, you know, and like that would be very like, you know, that's a strong storytelling. Or like, you know, Fassbender will say you'll have to like, I'll like rape Lupita Nyong'o unless you, like, you know, turn on your own sleeves or whatever. It's like that kind of thing where, like, it's the intensity of it is like, you know, well, this really happened and this means something now. It's like it's warping reality and abusing reality for, let's be generous in saying, I don't know, money and ratings or whatever. And as a result, it really makes people comfortable with just continuing to fuck with black people. Ovaldo mentioned in one of his articles, I think the first Black Lightning article that that I didn't talk about All in the Family, where the idea is that Archie Bunker is this sort of like bigoted guy who was kind of, you know, made silly because his stuff that he was talking about was kind of ridiculous, and he always had like his like liberal kids and his like more passive wife kind of, you know, kind of rolling their eyes at him, to where he was a lovable bigot or whatever. And there have been like research and reports done where racists would watch that show and feel that their perspectives were being sort of softened, but yes, still made palatable.
Yeah.
Where, you know, they wouldn't say nigger, they would say coon, and, you know, as a silly word as that is, that would be sort of, you know, code language where, you know, you could still be, you could still exist in this country and think that way. Mm-hmm. And I know there was a story where, like, you know, Archie Bunker accidentally got, you know, fell into the KKK, and he was like, whoa, this is no good. But generally still, it's like, you know, he could still, it was, I don't know, it was like his line of thinking was just fun enough to where it could result in, like, a multi-season series and a spinoff and a sequel series.
Yeah.
you know, that means a lot to people of color, and it doesn't mean anything to, or it doesn't mean anything to many white people. That's just the fact of it. It just, that means that, well, that doesn't mean that the show is racist, but another thing is, well, it's sort of an underground railroad for racism, essentially.
Yeah, totally. And I think the note about, you know, white people should just, like, they can't tell certain stories. Like, it's the same thing. It's like, that I think is the thing. But it's also, like, what causes the pro-Confederate side, which is, that's a hell of a label. That's what causes them the most anxiety. And that's kind of, like, where the, you don't want to set a precedent, you don't want to revoke the rights of storytellers. That's where that comes from. But it's not so much that, like, we're just kind of jumping at ghosts. It's, they've had so many fucking chances. They've told so many of these stories. Mm-hmm. They've made so many of the same goddamn mistakes, mm-hmm, and caused so much damage in the minds of people who have guns or who are racist. Like, storytelling is not something to be fucked around with. It's fucking, it's for real. It's for serious. And, like, Confederate, like, what, like, what is it trying to do exactly? Like, it could only, like, at its best, it could only ever be a problematic fave. Like, that's not enough. Because, like, you know, 12 Years a Slave, Underground, these kinds of things, like, they are based in history. You know, they might take fictional whatever, but they are for education. Like, that's part of their idea, is to be educational. Same with Detroit. But then it's like, well, is that also the guiding light for Confederate? Are they trying to be educational? Because at that point, first of all, that's fucking
it's
pretty
a failure
forward.
Of the schools.
Well, yeah, also a failure of the schools, but it's like, you know, okay, so these two white guys are gonna like educate us about slavery? Like, that's pretty fucked. I think, like, you know, it's not just about how that sounds, it's about all the tropes that they're gonna fall into. And I think it's just like, we gotta think about the audience always, and I think that there's this kind of there's a certain edginess that comes with talking about slavery a certain way. Like, it's the same, like, you know, saying the South the Emancipation Proclamation came because of like the economy or whatever, that it wasn't about slavery, it was about the economy. That kind of like high school edginess that exists in the hearts of many, many people. And it was the same, like, I in college, after 12 Years a Slave had come out, my college roommate, who was a white guy, was going on and on and on about Michael Fassbender's performance and like how the movie was like okay, but his performance was like so good. And it's like, okay, I'm sure it was. Fassbender's a good actor, but like, shut up. Like, at some point, you got to stop. Because I think like racism is one of the earliest lessons that we learn as children, that it's not okay to use the N-word. It's not okay to, you know, you got to share your cookies or whatever. It doesn't matter, like, color of your skin. All the very basic ass lessons you learn. And so I think that when you kind of grow older, depending on who you are, being racist is also kind of like being anti-authority. You're kind of challenging the status quo because your status quo was racism is bad, obviously. And that, you know, that's the audience that we're dealing with. That's the audience that we had when it was Generation KKK. It's like, you know, you don't know who's the potential KKK among that audience who will be born or come to when they see that show, when it's normalized for them like it is with Archie Bunker. Like, keeping these shows away from them is stifling creativity, yes, but it is also keeping the creation of potential KKK members. Like, I think you got to weigh those things. And yes, the end of storytelling is scary, but we're talking about racism here. Well, like, this is a very specific case with Confederate, with Generation KKK. Like, this is about racism against black people, which has always been very, very violent. And it's like fucking slavery. Like, they said it themselves. That's the great sin of this country. And they're playing with it like it's a fucking ball on a paddle. Like, this is serious shit. And, like, they talk about – I don't want to keep going up, but they talk about how they're history buffs, and, like, that's kind of their thing. Like, they – that Vulture article, like, they jump right off the bat saying, like, oh, we're history buffs. We love this stuff. Like, that's exactly what Ken Levine had said during the production of Bioshock Infinite, which was not really like this, but it traded in a lot of, like, antiquated, like, racial imagery and that kind of thing. It was about a super America, basically, like this America that was too extreme even for America, that it lifted off into the sky. And that game had a really dangerous message, which was equating the violence of the oppressors with the violence of the uprising. Like, that's a really stupid-ass thing. And so it doesn't matter how much of a history buff you claim you are. At some point, you don't know this stuff in your heart, and maybe you just don't know it. And it's not like you can never know it, but I don't trust the guys behind Game of Thrones. Like, that's what it comes down to.
Yeah. If it was, I don't know, like, maybe the ball in the air, like David Simon, maybe. But like that's the thing too. It's like you said, like, you know, this is not a ball and paddle. Like you can tell any story you want, but you cannot do it with however you feel, you know.
Yeah,
you can't do it glibly. Like Stephen King says, is you got to take writing seriously. If you're going to take it seriously, then you're going to invoke some problematic stuff or whatever. But if you're taking the story seriously, then you should take the promotion of it seriously, which these guys didn't do, I feel. And I don't know, just. I think what you said about, you know, if this was a book, this would be a lot better because there would be a lot more nuance automatically in a book that you could understandably see play out in the television series. But yeah, in a TV show where, especially on HBO, which is just known for like just garbage television, exploitative fare, this really sounds like a cautionary example of like very hypothetical storytelling in the future in a work of fiction, you know, where like to comment on political correctness or slash, you know, how people are developing. There was an instance where someone said, we're gonna make a show, but what if slaves were in modern times? People are protesting. Like this feels like I would have read this in a book to comment on this very thing, which kind of reflects upon like kind of the insanity of it. And I just the heart of this issue to me is just, you know, kind of people taking it seriously. It there's different values in different instances, you know. Like I think that as I was thinking about this a lot, if I'm writing a story with a woman character, I can do that. Like let's say like a woman in a cast of characters and one of them's a woman, I can do that because I'm writing a story. It's good to be not to have all men, and you know, kind of think about that. If I'm writing a story about a woman and what it means to be a woman in American society, a black woman or a woman of color, that's not my story. But that's a primary story. If I'm really going to do that, that needs to sort of to me, in my I need to be, I don't know, like obsessed with that for like 3 to 5 years or whatever, to where, like, I feel that, like, it's a story that, like, that has to be told. And even in that way, I would involve, like, female storytellers to help, you know, get it right and to get it, have the proper voice, rather than just, I woke up one day and thought that this would be a good story to tell. And, I think at this point I'm starting to repeat myself, but damn, like, it really is that type of white privilege arrogance that rightfully pisses people off. And again, this is not an instance of something like you said, something that, you know, is like is worth ignoring. I think that, like, in a reality where someone described the black community in America, or the African American community, as the blacks, and how Detroit and Chicago are killing each other, and that guy became president easily. I shouldn't say easily, yeah, but easily enough. Like, this just, like Jesus Christ, don't do this show.
Yeah.
Please don't. Oh.
And so I think it comes down to, like, who puts the limits on the storytellers, and I think it should be the storytellers themselves. Like, we should expect more from people, and these guys should know better than to do something like this. Just the way that you would practice self-control if you were going to tell a woman about what it's like to be a woman in society. Like that, you might need some outside help, and they've sought outside help, if you want to call it that. But it's like, this is a, but again, like, that's a very different thing. You know, like, you could put out a story about what it means to be a woman by a man, and people would be like, okay. But in this case, it's like, you are, I mean, that comes with a lot. That could potentially be very damaging. Yes. I don't mean to minimize that, but if you're doing a work of speculative fiction about slavery, and you're doing something that's not historically based, and it has all that imagery and all that storytelling, like, yes, that's a very specific thing that interfaces with a mind, an audience you don't understand, clearly, white or black. Like, you don't fucking understand how this is going to be received. And, like, that's the sign. Like, you could actually go the other way with the novel thing too, like. Because, like, with Death Wish, like, that's a book, from what I understand, is a book about, like, he doesn't go after the guys. He just kind of goes on a shooting spree.
Right.
Like, it kind of sounds like a short story, or, like, some of those novels that just kind of have, like, a very compact premise to them. Kind of like I Am Legend, like, a very, like, satisfying core. Like, that's fine, but, like, when it's going to be expanded into when it's done in a movie, like, for some reason, like, those media are very different. Like, you are going to probably end up with that ambiguity because you're looking at that character's face the whole time, and he's being performed by an actor who, you know, puts in a very unique performance most of the time, but he can be very soulful or whatever, and he's got those eyes, and it's like, yeah, like, no matter what, like it's very rare for a movie to kind of be like that, to kind of be flat emotionally and just kind of show you something. It has to kind of engage you with a certain level of, like, emotions and all that crap. And, like, that, and so, like, that's just the way movies are, but that can, if you're telling a story that's not meant to be told that way, like, again, it's exactly what you said. It's like, you can tell any story, but you have to, I guess, tell it a certain way. And it's that kind of, like, you know, it's like the 9/11 joke, right? You gotta tell the right 9/11 joke. I guess that's kind of it.
Do you think that we've not talked about or really put in the thought that, like Malcolm and Nichelle, what's their last names? The two black writers who are working on the show. I mean, because they're not the showrunners, but I feel that, like, they had, you know, at minimum 50%, if not more, of, like, the talking in that Vulture interview, Spellman. Do you think we're not considering their input enough because they weren't the ones to come up with it, and that they're not the executive producers, but they are, you know, like they are executive producers. They are, I guess, like, you know, co-head writers. Like, is there? I don't know. I mean, is there even a potential latent, just ill-considered element of racism that we're not considering how they would contribute to telling this story? And you know, like, the white people's, like, you know, ignorant perspective would kind of carry on forward. How, because they are involved, are we not giving them the benefit of the doubt?
Yeah, I think so, but also, because, yeah, there's a lot to, there's many ways to approach that, and I think I guess we kind of fucked ourselves when we said it's not about the story, but the storytelling, because obviously they would be storytellers, whereas Benioff and Weiss are the story, whatever, they just handed it down, and then we're going to see what goes. But I think it just kind of goes back to the kind of the uniqueness of the situation, that this is specifically about slavery and the audience not being like, there's only so much you can do with that. And even if like the kind of the first reaction is like, well, there are only two black people versus like a million on Twitter. It's like, you know, they cannot, I guess it's
they don't
a little
speak
bit more,
for black people.
Exactly. Like that's kind of always been our answer when it comes to this kind of thing. But in this case, it's like, well, at some point you're not going to have a million people telling a story, so you have to cut it off at some point. But at the same time, like, I just think that this is not a story you can salvage. And first of all, why would you want to? Because that's the level we're at. But most importantly, it's just like, there's only like, we know, again, it's present. Like, the slippery slope argument doesn't hold up here because we know what these stories lead to. And it's not just about the white creators every time, although that's always been a huge factor. It's just like, I mean, there is a white engine behind this, and it's not just the two showrunners. It's also HBO. And the kind of like the expectations, like playing into certain expectations of what an audience would want to see. They want to see conflicted characters. And when those conflicted characters are slave owners, like, that's not very realistic. Like, that's not a thing that you should fabricate, because that's not going to play well. But yeah, I mean, I think that anybody who's going to comment on this, like me, should look into them, should watch an interview or read some of their statements about it. But you know, I mean, they're throwing themselves onto the fire. It's going to be interesting to see what happens when this show is inevitably made. So I don't know.
Well, I know that, just making dust double checking, but one of them has done or has worked on Empire, which take for that what you will. The other one has done like The Good Wife.
Okay.
Which I've not seen or barely know about. Go ahead.
That's all right. In terms of sociopolitics, it's okay.
I think Nichelle Spellman has worked on that, but like, I mean, again, this is kind of a frustrating thing about it, because you don't want them to have, you know, I don't know, like, drawn up the I Have a Dream speech to be required to tell this show. But at the same time, it's interesting to learn about that. I always go back to, I'm saying like the fourth or fifth time now, but like, I just feel that like there's just not enough, like, I don't know, there's just not enough care into distributing the idea of this around. Because if they have like no characters, no overarching plot or whatever, or even an end goal. Like, will this show end with like liberation and the Emancipation Proclamation, or is it be like, you know, and history continued just the same, just like our history?
Yeah, makes turn the oh god, that Futurama episode where it's like, turns out it's man. It's just like, okay. Yeah, I mean, that's the point, right? Like, for everybody saying like, you don't know enough about this, how can you say it's not worth it? Like, how could you say it is worth it? Like, we both know the same amount of information. It's incredible that, like, first of all, people want to see a show like this. Like, that never even occurred to me.
Shit. No, I just never thought about that. People are like, this sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, like, first, like, I did, like, I always thought that, like, the pushback was just, like, being scared about losing storytelling privileges, but I guess some people might actually want to watch a show like this. That is pretty insane. But also, like, yeah, like, they don't, like, maybe they have some outlines or whatever, but usually you don't know the end of a show until you're at the end of the show, which is why television is a bastard medium, and it sucks. I mean, Game of Thrones is an exception, because that's based on I guess there were always outlines, and maybe George R. R. Martin has the ending locked away in a safe somewhere, but maybe those two know it, but like, yeah, like, they don't have characters, they don't have an outline. Like, what the fuck is their motive to even do this? Like, anyone, like, if you don't, like, if you're not telling a compelling story, like, that premise is not compelling enough for a show. Like, that's so stupid. Like, yeah, I think that really kind of cuts to the heart of it. It's just like, they don't have anything yet. Like, what is the driving factor here?
Yeah, thankfully, I'm not seeing anybody say, I want to see this show. And I know that they're out there, but I don't want to think about it. But I feel that, like, I can understand that people say, you know, it's part of, like, an American right to tell any story you want, but that, I think that used to mean something else way back when. Now it doesn't. Now we kind of just know. And I feel like we're failing this conversation by not mentioning specific instances. I guess the All in the Family thing is the closest we get to, like, you know, people, racist people reacting to media. But,
yeah.
you know, we know it's a thing. So I want, yeah, it's got to be done with the utmost of care. You have to earn the right to tell any story you want. Ultimately, otherwise you're a hack. Quite frankly,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. That's kind of tricky. I mean, I don't know. I mean, how do you go about earning the right, though?
Well, I mean, some people. I feel that these Game of Thrones dudes, Vice.
They lost it.
Well, I mean, I feel as though, yeah, because Game of Thrones is a wildly successful show. It just dominates. I won't say it dominates, but like, you know, I'm always reminded of how big it is because, like, at San Diego Comic Con, it's always Game of Thrones stuff, like on the lampposts and on the ceilings and stuff. So, like, I mean, it's one of the most popular shows of our time. So that popularity lends them to do any show as long as they can repeat that popularity, no matter what their ideas are, because their ideas are great, even though it's based on a novel series.
Yeah.
So I guess in that way they have earned it on the business side. But in terms of, like, I don't know, respectability politics, or that's not the right phrase, just like how they tell stories that are not about white guys.
Yeah.
Oops.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's funny because there's a similar, not I won't say similar story, but there's another story of adapting a show that is not one's own. And that's Vin Diesel bringing back Miami Vice.
Oh, what?
Yeah, I'd so much rather talk about that because it's harmless and just bizarre. I heard about that. It's like, oh, he's gonna wear a wig.
So is that like a TV show or?
Yeah, I think it's a TV show.
Wow, that's nuts. I mean, the thing about, like, I just started getting into Michael Mann this year, and I bought Miami Vice on Blu-ray. I'd known about that movie. It's got a reputation as being just, like, the longest masturbation session. Like, his style and all that L.A. crap just, like, for 2.5 hours. I really want to see it now that I've seen Heat and Collateral. But, like, I just can't – like, there's actually some level of, like, seriousness behind Miami Vice. And, like, Vin Diesel, like, I don't know that he's ever been in a serious movie. Like, I think he can be a pretty good actor.
Ryan, he was maybe not. But, well, also, I know that he was in the movie, like 10, like, it was after the first couple of Fast and Furious, but, like, he did this movie where he was playing this business guy, and he, like, gained weight and, like, wore a wig. It was, like, a serious, I didn't see it, but, like, he got, like, accolades from his acting. So, like, I don't want to write off Vin Diesel as this big, dumb guy, even though he might be. But, like, I know that he has, you know, he's dipped his toe into other stuff, which is pretty cool. But that's just a funny thing, because Miami Vice is very much, when you think about it, you think of, like, the product, it being a product of his time. So it's like, what about that does he see as timeless?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I love like Don Johnson in his, like, sweet, like, you know, big shoulder jacket and pink shirt, and the black guy in his, like a slick down business suit with, like, the Jerry curl. Like, that is so specific.
It really is. I mean, that did capture a very specific atmosphere. And I've only seen the pilot of that show, but it was pretty cool. Like, I mean, I don't think I'd, like, watch any more of it, but, like, yeah, that is super, super bizarre. And like Vin Diesel, I guess he's like a producer or something now. Like, what is he doing? He's just going around shopping for ideas.
Well, I hear that, like, he the Fast and Furious franchise continues because of him. Like, either his money or, like, his backing or whatever. But, like, and of course, you know, the billions of dollars it makes. But, like,
sure.
Yeah, he's big into that, which granted him to do, like, that like last Witch Hunter film just for the heck of it.
Yeah, and Riddick. He leveraged his house for that too. Who cares?
I remember you saying that. I think you mentioned that on your BBPX episode. But the only episode I've seen of Miami Vice is the one with Red Brown in it, where he was a psychopath. But I guess to crank it over on topic, like, you know, what about people would say that, well, racism is, you know, we're experiencing it now. It's a very relevant subject matter, which is why this show might be very important. But I think it is the. Again, it's the kind of gall to say, you know, black people don't need to be reminded that white people don't like them, kind of thing.
Yeah.
For lack of a better phrase, and also just, I don't know. Like a really good movie is Spike Lee's Get on the Bus, because you have these black guys on this bus to go to like the Freedom Anniversary of the Freedom March, and you hear a lot of different perspectives. Some of them good, some of them not good. Andre Brower is in it. Charles Dutton. Who played McNulty's partner in The Wire?
Oh, Wendell Pierce.
Wendell Pierce is awesome in it as an asshole. You have a diversity of voices, I think. And in this, you know, I'm imagining, like, you know, like they say they're going to have abolitionists and essayists and journalists and slave hunters, whatever. And I feel that, like, you know, Frederick Douglass, I have a framed poster of Frederick Douglass that is right across me on my wall. He was a very real person. And I feel that, like, this kind of show would kind of make him into, like, a character archetype. And who would be badass with his, like, you know, YouTube speeches and all that kind of stuff. Rather than just, you know, somebody that, like, I learned about in college and read his autobiography and like, I mean, I don't know. It's like, slavery is America's history by way of black people's, you know, like, racial bloodline. We don't really know shit about Africa. So, like, to propose where would it have gone in this way feels, well, at the same time, making Death Wish 2017, I don't know, it just kind of feels like they're unconsciously holding on to as much white privilege as they possibly can muster with the advent of an Obama presidency and Ava DuVernay, you know, successful career. And I know that this to me is very, very, like, kind of extreme, but I kind of feel that's kind of what it's kind of, you know, digging itself into, if I can kind of, I don't know. I don't really have things to say, but, like, that's sort of kind of getting really, really, really deep into it.
Yeah, and I forgot how this fits in, but I remember Django Unchained, and, like, that's kind of a similar situation where it's a white director who is, you know, hasn't had the best track record when it comes to race relations as he's depicted them on film. But he's telling a story about the antebellum South during slavery. And I think we weren't really having this kind of conversation back then. This was 2012.
No.
The conversation was about, you know, is this going to inspire a race riot, which happens every time. Like, that was the same thing with Machete. I don't remember the race riot, but it must have been pretty mild. But, you know, that movie, like, really, like, the reason that's the only Tarantino movie I genuinely dislike is because it just wasn't, like, I was so hyped for that movie, and it was just nothing. Like, there was barely, like, there was one montage of people getting shot, and then there was, like, a gunfight at the end that I don't really remember. Like, that was supposed to be the apology for Inglourious Basterds not having any violence in it, and it was this total fucking cock tease. And, like, I think, like, that movie just totally fucked us. I think that we could trace a lot of this back to Django Unchained, because that did the job of inciting or triggering white people, because it was the movie about slavery or a slave who kills white people, and it didn't deliver. So, like, it just gave us nothing. It just – all it did was trigger those white people. And so, like, I don't know, man. Like, I hate to kind of keep barreling on or piling on Tarantino as the cause of all evil in the world, but, like
– Go ahead. Yes, for it.
I just feel like, man, that was a really shitty thing. And then, like, the Inglourious Basterds thing, it's like, we're apologizing for Nazis because look how brave they are. It's just like, like, I think we have to kind of think about the audience more and kind of trace a line, how we've historically reacted to certain things. Like, we gave Django Unchained the best Oscar, or the Oscar for best screenplay. Like, we react to certain things away. I think you could kind of map this out in a line and kind of arrive and realize that, you know, this Confederate thing isn't something out of the blue, that it's really connected to a lot that's been going on. And to say that, oh, you don't want to revoke storytelling is not really considering, like, all that's happened before and all the shitty things. And, you know, we're just not ready to have this show. And maybe we never will be until, I don't know, America apologizes for slavery, like, in a real way. Like, that's a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where my brother came down to, where we kind of calmed down and started talking. He said, you know, he really helped me see things that I didn't consider before, like why the audience is reacting rather than just the fact that they're reacting.
Yeah, that's huge.
And it's funny because I like Django Unchained. It's interesting because, like, I've talked about it with my brother. Like, I saw it with my friend Sharina. You know, we're both black, and like we kind of tend to, if we're not watching, like, shit like Power Rangers or Pain and Gain, I guess. We're watching like the black movies like Get Out and Django Unchained. And we kind of just like eat that shit up with popcorn. But it's interesting because I talked about my brother since then. I think it came on television or whatever. We were watching it and like we were kind of talking about how what we liked and what we didn't like. Maybe Jamie Foxx was miscast. It wasn't as charismatic as he should have been. And they both really like Samuel L. Jackson and Leonardo DiCaprio in it. But, like, yeah, it's an interesting thing because it should just be this just gigantic revenge story that completely takes over the film rather than a story that involves revenge. So that's an interesting perspective to take. I know that Quentin Tarantino has talked about, like, in the 90s wanting to make a Luke Cage film, and which would have been interesting because it probably would have been very, very, like, stereotypical.
Yeah.
not like the Netflix show. To say the least, but something kind of doesn't go far enough. There was a comic book, I think this time last year, I believe it was called Nighthawk. It was done by Marvel, written by a black writer, David Walker, about a black vigilante who straight up fucking killed like corrupt cops, and it was canceled in 6 issues. but it was just, I never actually got around to reading it, but like I was like. People loved it, critically acclaimed. And there was this Black Panther spinoff called Black Panther and the Crew, which involved Black Panther, Missy Knight, and Luke Cage, and I think Storm even. And they were kind of investigating, like, you know, murders in lower end black neighborhoods. And that was canceled in 6 issues. So there's been like, this discussion about, you know, giving these black voices a chance compared to, you know, like well, Game of Thrones is pretty popular. Here's a story about, you know, Confederate or whatever, like, it is a kind of thing where, I've never seen a black story necessarily go too far, with certain things. Like, there's this comic called Black, which is about what if black people had superpowers, which is why white people hate them or whatever, and I don't like it. I really don't, I really, really don't think it's very good. But, it's one of those things where, like, they really kind of want to, if talking about race, it's hard to go far enough where it's either exploitation fair or it is, you know, not pushing the idea long enough. And that's difficult. And you shouldn't call upon creators of color to constantly do that. But I guess education will always sort of, you know, regulate the requisite amount of commentary into characters where race is involved by way of them being diverse or something like that.
Yeah. I think that's ultimately what it comes down to, and you know, these guys, like, if they were better educated about these issues, they might not take this approach. Did I read today that Black was gonna get a TV show?
Oh, I hope not. Please, no.
I think I saw that on Deadline. But anyway, I did. You know, one of the arguments against the show that I didn't really like is like, why didn't they hand off production duties entirely to people of color? Like, I just don't. Like, I feel like people have this kind of weird idea of what Hollywood should be that is kind of like, I don't know, anti-creator, or like maybe I'm just too solipsistic, but like I just don't understand what creator would pitch an idea and then just hand it off to somebody else. Like, if they want to tell that story, then that, like, that's obviously something that they want to see through to the end. Like, I just, that's so bizarre to me, but like that's no solution. Because again, like, at some point, something rotten is going to be in this. In this idea, and it's not going to be executed well because maybe it just can't be. Maybe there are. Well, okay, I'm not going to do that because we kind of already established that there. You can tell any story, whatever. But it's. I guess to me, it's all about the audience. Well, also jumping around a little bit, I would have no problem with this show being prematurely or proactively canceled or whatever, preemptively.
Aborted.
Yeah, exactly. That's, yeah, it's maybe a little graphic language, Donovan, but
yeah.
No, just kidding. You know, this has happened before. Like, I think I've mentioned Mail Order Bride before on the show, but like, nobody's missing that. Like, there's no Mail Order Bride Reddit or subreddit. Maybe there is, but like, you know,
that's always a fear. Maybe there is.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? But like, you know, there is a precedent for, speaking of the slippery slope, like, it's worked out, you know? It's like, that's not a problem. Like, we didn't need that show, and we didn't get it. Like, maybe it could have worked out and been fine, but, like, at the end of the day, who fucking cares? Like, stories are only good once they're told, and I think they can be bad a lot sooner.
That's a very, very interesting way to say about it.
Maybe.
No, that one. We shall see. I will say that, as a final talking point, and I feel like I'm always mentioning this, but like, I didn't know better when I was a teenager, when I was a kid, but like, like the show Justice League Unlimited, or Justice League, and it's like, you know, and it's third through fifth season, Justice League Unlimited. It was a show, it was about DC Comics here, about superheroes, it was about the Justice League, but it involved a lot of their, like, black characters, and their, like, non-white characters, and it had, like, a lot of black writers on it. Not just for, I mean, that wasn't ever, like, done on, you know, it has to be like, done on purpose or whatever, but, like it had Dwayne McDuffie, who created the Milestone characters, he created Static, he was a head writer who eventually became executive producer on it. It had James Tucker, I think Gail Simone did a script or whatever, but it was a very diverse show that never wore that on its sleeve. It had a lot, you know, it made people familiar with the John Stewart Green Lantern, and it had characters like Mr. Terrific and Vixen, and you know, when they went to the future, you saw Static as a 65-year-old man, that kind of stuff. And it was just one of those things. It was just such a validating show to watch, not only as a comic book fan, but as a black comic fan. That I always just go back to, and it's like, you know, it was sort of like Nirvana that we didn't even realize we had, and so in that I was like, well, how's that compared to Confederate? Because half of the writing team are black, but it's like, I guess Confederate subject matter is just so volatile that it just means more rather than, oh man, Lex Luthor just fused with Brainiac. It's like, it's not the same thing, and I feel that like they could have certainly done worse than not bringing those guys along, because I guess they're friends. But the Spellmans,
yeah.
But I feel as though that. I mean, I will very much, when the trailer comes out, I'll check it out, and see if they really put their money where their mouth is and give them that chance, because they have the black writers on there. If they didn't, I would absolutely turn a blind eye towards it. I don't want to watch a show about modern day slavery. I don't want to watch that show. I really don't. I don't care how insightful and, you know, how many essays and inspires is. I just don't fucking feel it. I feel like we can do better in terms of talking about race in the modern day than presuming if it never carried on, especially in nonfiction. But I'll give them the chance at the trailer because of the Spellmans writing it. I feel that, like, they've earned that shot. DV Vice or the other guy, but, you know, I don't know. It's sort of like in black loyalty or whatever, but that's what I deign to do.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I probably won't look at it, but I am not as, like, offended as some people, so it's just a matter of laziness, I suppose, on my part. But, I mean, I think we're kind of afraid of the moral ambiguity that always goes on in these kinds of shows, because this is an HBO show, so that means a certain thing. And, like, yeah, the narrative, like, it's not a matter of guessing, but, like, a matter of putting together the premise and the medium. And so even if the Spellmans are, even if they, like, kind of become the main showrunners, like, it's always going to be a story about, at least in the first season, people being conflicted about slavery. And if that's eventually going to turn into a lesson about how you shouldn't be conflicted about slavery, like, that's just stupid as hell. You didn't need to have the first part, because we didn't need that. And so, like, yeah, I don't see this being, like, I don't know if there's a way that it could be good, no matter who's behind it.
It should not invite debate.
Exactly. The debate's over. Like, that's ridiculous.
Jesus Christ. And we're not giving these people the benefit of the doubt. We are not presuming them to be smart about this, because they're in Hollywood. They very well might be, but, like, I just can't presume that they are. Sorry.
Right. Exactly. Well, for the other guys, like, they've, you know, we have Game of Thrones. Like, that's a pretty dumb fucking show.
That was sort of my thing, too. Is that, like, Game of Thrones is certainly gotten its, you know, detractors in terms of, like, you know, how they handle certain diverse characters. So, like, I felt that right there was sort of, like, you know, a red flag.
Yeah.
Just based on secondhand knowledge. Okay, so for the next episode, we will keep it light and not heavy.
Light and light.
We'll be talking about trans issues.
Yes.
Specifically, how do we do better when engaging with trans issues. There's been a resurgence of conversation in the media concerning Trump's numbskull trans ban. There's been certain online people who talked about it, and comedians and whatnot. So we'll be naming names in the next episode. But yeah, how do we do better engaging with trans issues is the topic. So if you have thoughts on that or this, email in at qnoanswers@gmail.com. And I think that's where we'll leave it for this week.
Yes.
So is there anything else to say about the upcoming Confederate show?
Look forward to it in the 2019 fall season, I guess.
Here's the question. I'm going to say that. I was going to say which is going to happen more, that show or Trump still being president?
Oh yeah, gosh, we'll see.
Yeah, we shall see. That's a nail biter of a foreshadowing kind of thing. Whatever. Until next time, adios.
It's not.